is Peter Johnson introducing the Catholic Heritage Program broadcasting from England, bringing you traditions, trips, and information from our Catholic past and inspiration for our Catholic future. Ferneyhough is an old shrine in Lancashire in the north of England. It is rich in history and has a tale to tell of carnage and endurance. Joanna Bogle has been a pilgrim there.
Stranger, is there not a spell stays thy steps at Lady Well? Changed the lowly fane of yore, gone the wondrous tree that bore wilding fruit without a core, but the fountain faileth not, nor unloved the quiet spot. That's the beginning of an 1846 poem about the shrine of Lady Well at Ferneyhough in Lancashire. Ferneyhough perhaps is England's oldest shrine to Our Lady, and as we'll hear in a minute, it actually goes right back to pagan times. It's near Fulwood at Preston in Lancashire, right in the heart of the most Catholic part of England. Its origins go right back to Anglo-Saxon times, when it was old even then. We'll hear from Father Benedict Russillo something of the history of Ferneyhough. But first, what do we see when we go to Ferneyhough, Lady Well, today? First, as its name implies, there's a well with clear water, said to have healing properties. Then there's a shrine, with a place where you can pray and people like to say the rosary. And finally, there's an old house, dating back several hundred years, and full of history of recusant times in England, the times when the Mass was banned by law, and priests had to celebrate it in hiding. There's an old missionary altar, used by many of the English martyrs, including St. Ambrose Barlow and St. Edmund Campion. There are relics of many of these martyrs, especially those from families in Lancashire. There are pictures of Our Lady and the saints that have been donated to Ferneyhough over the years. And there are rooms where people pray knowing that people prayed here in times gone by when the Mass was very hard to find and very much loved by the loyal Catholics of Lancashire. The story of Ferneyhough does date back to pagan times, but the story that's really important to us starts in the year 1100. When it is said a rich merchant was on a ship which found itself in grave trouble out in the Irish Sea, between the coast of England and the coast of Ireland. A terrific storm had blown up, and he begged and implored the Almighty for help, making a promise that if he survived the storm with his cargo intact and made it safely to shore, he would restore an old shrine in honour of Christ's mother Mary. Well, he did put safely into shore, somewhere along the way of Liverpool, and found his way inland, and his cargo was intact, and he was able to sell it, so he had plenty of money. Looking for a shrine, he made his way well inland into Lancashire, and finally found his way to Preston. It was while he was there that he had a dream which directed him further, saying that if he wanted to find the shrine that he should restore, he should look for a place where there was a clear water, clear stream, flowing by a crab apple tree that bore fruit that didn't have a core, and there he would find the old shrine. He even learned its name, Ferneyhough. But Ferneyhough was then, and is today, very hard to find. It lies beyond Preston in the area of Fulwood. The name Fulwood is a corruption of Foulwood. The heavy, waterlogged, clay-like soil makes it very difficult to walk there, and the area is rather remote. Until the 1980s, you could only reach it by a rather rough, pitted lane. Now there is a proper tarmacked road. And it was while he was staying at Preston and trying to find the route out to Ferneyhough in Fulwood that he heard a maidservant at the inn where he was staying mention the name. She was making an excuse for being late in serving the supper, and she told her mistress that she'd had to chase a cow which had wandered all the way off to Ferneyhough. Well, the merchant who was staying at the inn talked to the maidservant and begged her to show him the way, which he gladly did for a small fee, and so he found his way to Ferneyhough. And there indeed he found the old shrine, the clear water, and the crab-apple tree that bore fruit without a core, and there he re-established the shrine of Lady Well. But it actually goes back to a much earlier date than that. So let's have Father Rusillo, guardian of the shrine for many years, tell us the story.
The name Ferney, if you know, is not the name of a place where people live. It isn't the name of a village or a hamlet like you have around here, Grimsa, Goosna. It is simply the Anglo-Saxon word for the ancient shrine. Now, historians argue that if the Anglo-Saxons called it the ancient shrine, to them it must have been ancient. Mm-hmm. And therefore the likelihood is that it was either Roman or ancient British. Now, if it was Roman or ancient British, since the majority of those were not Christians, the likelihood is that the shrine, the ancient shrine, the Ferneyth, was a shrine to a goddess, or some pagan god anyway.
The shrine of Ladywell flourished throughout the Middle Ages, and it was only destroyed in the reign of Henry VIII, when, as part of his dissolution of the monasteries, all private chantry chapels were ripped apart and the money went to the crown. Ladywell, Ferney Hough, was in fact one of the victims of the Pilgrimage of Grace, when people, men from Lancashire and Yorkshire, marched their way to London at the head of a great army, pleading with the king to save the old religion, and in particular to restore the monasteries which he and his agents had plundered. He in fact promised to do exactly that, because he was terrified of this vast army of men, and only when it had dispersed and the men had gone back to their farms and homesteads did he have the ringleaders arrested and hanged, and then he betrayed his promise, something which is still spoken of among Lancashire Catholics today. Ladywell had been destroyed, and throughout the coming years, particularly during the reign of Elizabeth I, Catholics could not get to Mass, and in this part of Lancashire in particular, it was places around Ferney Hough that kept the Mass going. At Ferney Hough today, there are many relics of those times, including an altar on which both Edmund Campion and Ambrose Barlow, both canonized English martyrs, celebrated Holy Mass. Partly because it was so remote, this part of England proudly held to the old faith, and there were many local men who became martyrs, going abroad to be ordained as priests, and then returning in secret to celebrate the Mass and minister to local Catholics. It's probably as a martyr centre that Ferney Hough is best known today, and now once again it is a centre of pilgrimage, where people come in their hundreds every year. There are open-air masses and processions, a large stone cross in the grounds, and all the normal trimmings of pilgrimage, right down to a shop where you can buy Ferney Hough mugs and plates. But above all, it is a centre of prayer. And today, the Lancashire Catholics are rightly proud of a place where the faith never died. Here's Father Rusillo again, telling a group of pilgrims about the story behind the missionary altar at Ferney Hough.
This is the old missionary altar. Now, this was built, it was made at the request of John Townley of Townley Hall, Burnley. I'm going to show you a picture of John Townley. There he is. Now, can you see him? He's dressed like that because of the time when he lived. It was in 1560 that John Townley of Townley Hall, Burnley, asked one of his tenants, Thomas Burgess, to make him an altar that would fold away and look like a sideboard and so fool the priest hunters. So this is the altar that was made, that requested John Townley, made by Thomas Burgess, one of his tenants. And then John Townley said to Thomas Burgess, "Look, if we are caught having Mass in the hall, and the hall is confiscated and all the estates go, everybody suffers. So will you keep the altar in your house? And when we people at the hall can get hold of a priest, we'll all come to you for Mass." That was agreed upon. And it was a fortunate arrangement because 4 years later, in 1564, John Townley was arrested for being a recalcitrant Roman Catholic. And he was imprisoned. In fact, after that, the whole of his life was imprisonment. Have you been in any of the cells at Lancaster Castle? You have? You have? Well, you know what it was like in those days to be in prison. Edmund Arrowsmith there, that's him on the wall. Edmund Arrowsmith was in a cell where he couldn't stand up properly and couldn't lie down properly. Of course, there was no central heating. Well, anyway, John Townley's life was all prison after that. He was first of all imprisoned in Chester, then he was imprisoned in York, then in the blockhouse in Hull, then in Manchester, then in the Marshalsea in London, and he had two spells at Ely in Cambridgeshire, and he was imprisoned in Oxfordshire. It was like that. That was his life. And in the end, he was simply worn out. He was sick and he was blind. And in his infirmity, they allowed him back home to Burnley, but every month he had to report to the magistrate and pay a fine. He was imprisoned in 1564 first. That's when he was first arrested. And Thomas Burgess decided it was too dangerous to stay on the Townley estates, so he moved, and he went to the de Hortons. But when the de Hortons conformed, he moved again. And this altar has been moving for something like 400 years, always in the possession of the Burgesses. It was in the middle of the 1800s that it passed out of the Burgess family into the Abbott family through marriage, and from the Abbott family it passed into the Clarkson family through marriage. And it was from the Clarkson that I got it, but not through marriage. I'll tell you how I got it, actually. It was the November before last. I went to see old Ted Clarkson and his sister. They had the altar. They were in the 80s, and they had the altar at their house, the Nook, Bolton the Sands. You see, when the altar came into the possession of the Abbott family, it was through the Abbott family that it came north of the Ribble to Lancaster, Dale Street, Lancaster. Previously, all its movements with the Burgess family were south of the Ribble, always between Wigan and Bamber Bridge. Well, I went to see old Ted, and his sister had actually moved into a place of retirement at Arkholme in the parish of Hornby. She was feeling her age. And so was Ted. There he was on a stick, and it was a November day. The house was quite cold, and Ted was sitting near a fire with his walking stick. And in the course of conversation, he says to me, "You know, I can't go on much longer. I want to join my sister, but what can I do? I can't just lock the door and go." He said, "Look." And I did look. And you think there's going to be an auction in every room. Every room was so full of things. And Ted said to me, "Yes." He said, You know what it's like. The first generation furnishes a house, and then the second adds to it, and so does the third, and so does the fourth. And then it gets like this." I noticed that there was china there from the time of George III. That takes you back to the American War of Independence. But what Ted was bothered about was the old missionary altar, vestments, relics, the sacred things. And I said, "Look, Ted, I'll come and take what I can." And he said, "Will you come before Christmas?" I said, "I'll come at the beginning of December, Ted." And that's what happened. I brought these from Ted, and he joined his sister. He's there now at in Arkholme with his sister. Now, to get back to the altar, I was telling you its movements were between Wigan and Bamber Bridge. And I can't go through the whole history. I'll just tell you one or two things. In 1581, The altar was at Denham Hall. And Edmund Campion said Mass on this altar. St. Edmund Campion said Mass on this altar during the Easter period of 1581. I know some people say he did not get as far north as this, but briefly what happened was, round about June the 24th, 1580, Edmund Campion came back to England. And he came up from the London area in 1581 and stayed with the Worthingtons at Blainscow. And 7 miles away at Denham Hall were the Burgesses with the altar, and they used to ride over from the Worthingtons. Edmund Campion disguised as a manservant, and they'd have Mass in the evening or the night time, and then he'd go back to the Worthingtons' place. And he used to preach at these Masses, and for years afterwards, people used to talk about his sermons. One afternoon, he was walking up and down in the garden of the Worthingtons' place, thinking what he was going to say at his evening sermon. He was standing near a pond. And suddenly, priest hunters burst into the grounds. And a quick-witted maidservant recognised who they were and what they were up to. There was Campion at the pond, and she pushed him into the dirty water, and he came up covered with weeds and dirt. And she berated him. What's the thing she called him? The dirty cowhand, she said, making advances to me of that kind. And she really let him have it. And some of these priest hunters gathered round her and really enjoyed the scurrility of her attack on him. Anyway, they went without finding him, and so she saved his life, and she also saved the property for the Worthingtons. Now, this is the kind of story that's come down to us. Why would stories like that come down to us if Campion was never up here? And anyway, that same year, he was arrested further south, and as you know, in that same year, on December the 5th, he was hung, drawn and quartered. Now, another martyr that said Mass on this altar was St. Edmund Arrowsmith. St. Edmund Arrowsmith was hung, drawn and quartered at Lancaster on the 28th of August, 1628. Edmund Arrowsmith, there he is. He said Mass on this altar when the altar was at Wood End. And actually, the judge that condemned Edmund Arrowsmith was acting against the mind of his superiors. This was the reign of Charles, King Charles, and King Charles was against. He was against all this bloodshed. But Judge Yelverton was determined to have the blood of Arrowsmith. During the case was on, all during the law case, the judge kept saying, "You'll die, you'll die." And in the end, Arrowsmith said to him, "And you too will die, my lord." And within a year or so, he was dead. He was sitting down to a big meal when suddenly he felt an awful blow on the top of his head. And he turned round and he began playing war with a manservant standing behind him. And the manservant was flabbergasted, he hadn't touched him. And during the argument, he got another blow on the head. He collapsed on the floor. He was taken up to his room, and that night he died. Now, this Judge Yelverton, I say, acted against the mind of his superiors when he condemned Arrowsmith to be hanged, drawn, and quartered. As a matter of fact, in Lancaster Castle, when Arrowsmith was there, was St. John Southworth. He wasn't hanged, drawn, and quartered. In fact, when Arrowsmith was being taken out to be executed, when he was being dragged on the hurdle through the courtyard, he lifted up his arm in a sign to St. John Southworth, who was up in a prison cell there, a sign that caused St. John Southworth to give him absolution. He was being taken out to execution. So, Edmund Arrowsmith was hanged, drawn and quartered at Lancaster. It was difficult to get people to do it. And this Judge Yelverton, he didn't have the crust to be present at it and gloat, but he watched it through a spyglass from his rooms. In fact, he made a vow that he wouldn't sit down and eat until Anna Smith was dead. And there was the table all prepared with venison, and he watched through the spyglass. And when Anna Smith was hand-drawn and quartered, he had the quarters brought to him and put on each side of his venison. Judge Yelverton.
The present house at Ferny Huff dates from the very early 18th century. This was a time when the savage persecution was just beginning to abate a little. Although the Catholic faith was still officially banned, it was just beginning to be possible to have a resident priest in one place and the Mass said, albeit secretly. Because this part of Lancashire was so Catholic, local people were able to buy this bit of land, remembering that it was still very remote, have a priest here, and rely on the fact that he could always be warned in advance if hunters were coming out from Preston or any other town to capture him. He would have time to hide the Mass vestments and the chalice and anything else, and make himself scarce. Things went on that way for a good many years, and it was from here that priests were able to go out and take the Mass to other districts. Finally, of course, the law was changed in 1829, allowing for Catholic emancipation. And then once again, Ferny Huff became an open Catholic centre, as it had been in the Middle Ages. Every pilgrim to Ferny Huff today hears all these stories. They will also hear the Ferny Huff hymn, which is sung in praise of God, and asking God, Our Lady, and all the English saints and martyrs to bring all of England once again into Catholic unity. We'll let Father Rusillo have the last word, telling us about this Ferny Huff hymn, which we could perhaps make our own.
In the Ladywell hymn, we sing, This place of thine own choosing. That's what we sing to Our Lady. Now, obviously, that's a reference to the rebuilding of the chapel by the rich merchant who in prayer was admonished, go to the ancient shrine, go to the Ferniath, and when you get there, look for this crab apple tree with a stream of clear water beneath it. Anyway, here is the hymn, and we sing it to the tune of O Jesus Christ Remember. O Mary Virgin Mother, we come to thy blessed shrine. Beside its hallowed waters, pour on us grace divine. This place of thine own choosing, as ancient stories tell, we love as thou dost love it, our own dear Lady Well. Through countless years thy children have prayed at Lady Well, and we have come, dear Mother, our love of thee to tell. Here, during times of peril, our martyrs sought thine aid, and thou didst keep them steadfast to face death unafraid. Bless thou our Holy Father, the vicar of thy Son. Keep safe the flock, his shepherds, that they may all be one. And bless our English country, once given to thy care. Bring England back to Jesus, we make our trustful prayer. Now, before we leave here and go along to the chapel, I would just like to say, St. Alban, St. Thomas of Canterbury, St. John Fisher, St. Thomas More, all you holy martyrs and saints of these isles, pray for us, pray for the church in these isles, pray for the conversion of these isles, pray for Ladywell, may it bear much fruit.
We hope that you've enjoyed this look at some of our Catholic heritage. There'll be more next time, so we hope you'll join us then. If you have any comments or snippets of history or information, do write to me, Peter Johnson, at Catholic Heritage, EWTN Global Catholic Radio, 1500 High Road, Vandiver, that's Vandiver, Alabama, USA, 35176. Or you can email us at radio@ewtn.org.